I'm Crispin Flintoff. I've just realised that on the left, or any opposition to what's going on by the with the government and the Conservatives or Labour parties who are governing us, is very weak at the moment. There's nothing there. There seems to be a failure of organisation. And it's easy to blame individuals, but I think there's just a longer term trend that's been going on with people not organising, but also people being isolated from each other and being demoralised and feeling that there's no hope and that there's no point in doing anything. I've felt that myself. I kind of didn't understand why it was happening to me that I was feeling this way and why everyone else is so divided. And then I remembered just how it was when I was a teenager working in a hospital in London, and the feeling of camaraderie was just extraordinary. I mean, you'd have porters and kitchen staff and refuge staff and the sterilizing unit and the doctors and the nurses and the catering staff. The whole hospital was full of team of people who just said hello to each other, got on with each other. They all went to the social club at lunchtime. They all had job security. Many of them, when I was there, were retiring, having had 40 years there, and coming back. They used to come back to the workplace after they'd left and hang around, and everyone had talked to them during their tea break, or they'd just be there during the day when people were working, and they'd just be chatting to them. And it was a great place to be in a work place. It was a great place to be. I can't really express how exciting it was to be in a hospital. I mean, it doesn't sound the most glamorous place, but there was a real buzz of, like I say, this sort of esprit de corps. People were working together. And at that time, there had been no PFI, no privatisation of hospitals at all. And so all of the departments were run by the hospital and by the NHS. There was hardly any agency staff. It was a wonderful place to be. And I was 18 at the time, and I never wanted to go to university. I'd been at this hospital. I just wanted to stay there all the time. I actually didn't want to go to university. I'd rather have worked delivering sharps containers and nappies to wards than be studying philosophy at Glasgow University. And I've never forgotten that atmosphere of that workplace. And it's not there. This doesn't exist anymore. I mean, I've worked in other jobs since then. I've worked in the supermarket. I've worked in offices where I've been a sub-editor. And I've had some kind of job security until about the mid-2000s. They started then to really give people the fear of their job going, lots of kind of cost cutting stuff, how much paper are we using, all these kind of things. But the fear of redundancy was hanging over people in all the workplaces I was at from the 2000s. And after that, I've seen 6 months contracts is the regular best you'll get. And I've not actually managed to even get more than that in any workplace when I was working. And the atmosphere is totally different because you're not in a team. You're fighting for yourself. You have to be the one who's the best in your particular department. It's you against the others. There's no sense of we're working together. And you find that there's no sort of social life there either. So you're kind of pushed into isolation against each other, which to me is, you know, it's just not going to make people feel happy or it's not going to make people feel part of a team or part of a community at work. And I can't help thinking that this is a deliberate policy to get people to fight for themselves against each other at work and not have this kind of teamwork that I described in the hospital. And everything is about competition. I mean, that's, I suppose, what capitalism is about. They always talk about competition is the best for us. But it's not really the best for human beings. It doesn't even bring the best service or the best prices, or it's a total myth about competition. I think that this is a real reason why lots of people are demoralized. Lots of people don't know what to do and they don't feel secure. They've got no network of community or workplace. And at the same time as that's happened, I have to say that the rise of social media has given people a fake community identity that I think is probably more damaging than good. I don't think social media lets people connect. It actually pushes people against each other. I'm sure there's some people who'll say it's really good because they get to call people cheaply or something like that. But the benefits are not outweighing the costs. And it's creating a society where we are full of either, you know, lonely people or people who are showing off on social media about their opinions or what they've got. And there's very little building of community going on. And if we're on the left, or I mean, I'll just say on the left because it's a shorthand, but if we're on the left, we need to build communities. That's what we're all about. We're not about being selfish and self-centered. And the platforms we've got are all about being selfish and self-centered. So it's kind of impossible to break through that. So we have arguments on social media that just cripple our ability to take on the government, whether it's Labour or Tory. I think it's worth maybe even giving up social media and just not doing it. I mean, I know some people who do it and they seem really happy. The people who don't use social media seem much happier to me than the ones who do. And workplace stuff. I mean, what are the unions doing? What happened to the trade unions? How did we get from? And I mean, actually, specifically on the NHS, how did the trade unions allow all those departments that I described, from the kitchens, the porters, the every single one of those departments? You know, they've all been privatized. They've all been outsourced. So that those people are no longer working in a team across departments. There's no hospital team. It's all different things going, working for themselves. The whole thing about that could only have been brought about by collaboration with trade unions. And I've heard from Dr. Bob Gill, the trade unions involved with the NHS are really failing to call out what's going on. And they're not putting up a fight. And even now you're seeing stuff like trade unions and other groups saying, let's not let them privatise the NHS. It's already been privatised. And they're saying, let's not let them take the NHS away. Why can't they just come clean and let's work on bringing it all back into public control? Because it's just slowly been hollowed out and sold off bit by bit to private companies who make a packet out of us being ill. God knows how much money those, for example, those car parks and stuff make. Anyway, you know, the NHS is only one area, but I think it's an important illustration to me. I mean, where I worked in the late 80s, and it's totally different. If I go back to that hospital, they won't let me hang around in that department at all because they might be seen. It's just incredible how kind of scary the workplace is now.
One thing I would add to that is that, you know, we as humans are actually, you know, or I don't know if anthropologists would say it, but we're kind of pack animals. We work a lot better when we're all in line. You know, maybe the only way to do that now is to join the army, Crispin.
Well, I mean, I bet the army's probably got some sort of outsourcing going on there as well. It's just incredible how things that everyone's competing with each other. And you say, we work together far better than when we're working against each other. If looking at history, people got those stones to Stonehenge. You know, they couldn't have done that with the private sector. They had to do it in some kind of community group of people all wanting to do this thing that was crazy. I mean, everything that has been achieved by human beings has been done without the profit motive. It's been done through love or fellowship or community. It's not been done by, we've got to make some money out of this. I can't see how we've come to this where we think it's just about profit. And people are buying that crap. I mean, the Thatcherite philosophy has just managed to win over all the political parties, other than a few fringe parties on the left. It's a terrible situation we're in. And I think it's deeper than people think. That people like to concentrate on personalities because that's what we're given by social media. We're told it's about Corbyn or Galloway or whatever. And it's not. It's deeper than that. And the thing that the person I miss at the moment is Tony Benn, because, you know, he would be 100 years old this next week. He was someone who would be able to see what was happening in the history of society and put it in context. And we don't have people who are doing that. We don't have speakers, politicians, who do anything other than sound bites and play to the social media crowd. And I mean, Tony Benn was lucky enough not to have been on Facebook or Twitter. As far as I know, I don't even know if he did any. If he had, would that have changed how he was? Maybe, I don't know. I mean, maybe these things are making our politics so the culture is everything has to be immediate and instant, and everyone's got to say something that goes with whatever the particular line is and whatever they think the population like to hear, rather than saying something deep and meaningful that actually might challenge people. I mean, I have to say on this, I think I was thinking about Jeremy Corbyn. I was thinking Jeremy Corbyn, he never says something that will upset someone particularly. He always wants to be saying something that's good with everyone, like we shouldn't be bad to poor people and stuff like that, but not to say we should be attacking these people or saying something that's a bit more bold. There's a lot of politicians on the left who seem to just say the thing that they think will be least offensive and will get them brownie points. It's just so crap. And, you know, like I say, Tony Benn, I remember, you know, when I was at school hearing his speeches and him talking without any pre-written speech, just talking about what's going on. And I just thought, you know, he's given me an education in history and where we are now. And we just don't seem to have anyone giving any context on what is actually going on why we're in such a bad state. Why is Starmer getting away with these cuts? Why is he getting away with sending us to war in Ukraine? Why is he getting away with backing a genocide? And we're not able to kind of argue back. It's a crazy, it's a really scary thing as well. He's arresting loads of people who challenge him, and none of the politicians in Parliament are making any, not even Jeremy Corbyn, are really making any noise about it. It's a...
I would also say, I think you're talking about insecurity of employment. I mean, that's one of the things you're saying there. But then I think we've also got compounded on top of that. We've got also increased insecurity in our housing. I mean, if you just look at the inroads that have been made into guarantees of council housing, social housing, we've now got, tens of millions of people in very insecure homes with insecure jobs. I mean, basically the idea is, to traumatise people.
I mean, you've just said something else. There's these issues going on that, you know, they've crept up on us. We haven't really been noticing it. The thing that makes me most, I mean, I'm old enough to see, I'm in my 50s and I'm old enough to remember when people weren't, I'm old enough to be a bit before Thatcher selling housing, council houses. I'm a bit older than that. I remember when renting a house was great. People were happy to rent. There wasn't an issue with that. But I noticed a lot of younger people on the so-called left are saying, it's not fair, we can't buy our houses. And I'm thinking, that isn't, you actually believe that that is what you need. I mean, you think that is going to change your life, and that's something that you deserve as a person, to own your house. What is the point of that? It's an investment. It's not going to make your life happier. What was working was people had security of tenure, whether it was privately rented or council, and the numbers of people who were renting was, I think it was something like, it was over 2/3 of the population. I think it was 75% were renting in the 70s, and it just went to, you know, now it's nothing like that, and people are obsessed with owning their own homes. And having that fear of possibly not paying the mortgage, or, you know, what the house prices are going to be like. And I've seen people who've really burned their fingers on that kind of stuff. I mean, I don't own my own home. I've never really owned a home. I mean, I was in a relationship with someone who bought a house and I had a stake in it, but I never, I didn't go on from that and buy my own home anywhere else. I've never aspired to own my own home, and it doesn't make me feel insecure to rent. But then if you rent and you don't, you have to keep moving around now, because they can, you know, keep putting the rent up. So, and the rents are high, and, you know, so yeah, you never have a community around you. You're kind of always moving. I mean, I moved, I think, about 8 times in the 2000s. I had to move 8 times in, you know, different boroughs, different parts of London. It wasn't, I couldn't ever settle down anywhere, because I couldn't find somewhere that would, I could stay that long. So yeah, it's the same as with the work. The housing situation is exactly the same.
Look, Crispin, I can't let you go without asking you about this spring statement we've had from Rachel Reeves this week. In a nutshell, you're talking about something like 20,000 kids being plunged into poverty by it. That's just the basic official figures, maybe much worse than that. To pay for a rearmament to fight the Russians. Now, it doesn't seem to be really very much pushback anywhere in Parliament, really, for this. The Tories are going along with it with a few quibbles. But it does look as if there's really no opposition to a left-wing party, which seems to have taken on some very Tory sort of ideas.
Well, I mean, I'm doing it on social media. I am just appalled at these virtuous statements from Labour MPs saying they don't agree with this and this is the wrong direction. We shouldn't be doing this, but they're not resigning. They are staying in the Labour Party and making sounds that you know, they're not a bad sort of person. They don't mean to be doing this. And there's someone, I think it was the Unison General Secretary, said she's a bit disappointed. She's the Unison General Secretary, representing over a million, I'm sure, you know, people who are in poorly paid jobs compared with her. And in jobs insecurity, and she's saying she's a bit disappointed. I've interviewed people who are disabled activists who believe that people will die through either starvation or suicide. And we've already had, in the last, well, since John Major's government, I would say thousands of people have been killed by cuts to disability benefits and the threats of sanctions and stuff like that. And the contempt they've got for people who are, you know, who have had a misfortune in some way to be unable to work. I find it, I mean, I am just so scared and angry at the same time about Starmer and this government. I mean, they have shown they have no respect for humanity in Gaza, and now they have shown they have no respect for humanity in this country, and yet people are not really able to protest against it, because if there's an intimidation by police on this, the media are right behind him. He's got all of them just doing whatever he wants. They never give the views of anyone who's in opposition, who's really in opposition. They only give the views of virtue signalling MPs. They don't give views of people who are actually going to die and on the edge on this. It is, you know, I thought Starmer was going to be bad, but he's much worse than I imagined. And the war in Ukraine, what on earth are we doing? And there's no point in this thing. Russia is not going to suddenly give up this claim to that territory, in which is only the Russian speaking part of Ukraine. They've got no interest in any other part of Ukraine. The idea that they want to come into Poland is nonsense. And the fact that the media are not calling it out, I mean, it's just the media is such a joke. And the social media stuff as well, the algorithms are biased against anyone who's telling the truth about what's happening. And the fact that we think we've got social media as well. I mean, I'm beginning to think social media is the biggest con, that we spend so much time thinking, oh, we're going to put tweets out that tell people really what's going on. And only 1,000, 10,000, 100,000, if you're lucky, see it. And in a population of whatever, 65, 70 million, it's just, you know, where are we? What are we doing here? I just want to keep my spirits up and keep people's spirits up. I think that's all we can do, because if we've got no morale and our spirits are low, then we can't do anything. So, you know, engaging with people in whatever way we can is all we can do at the moment, until we find an answer to how we take on these, this nightmare of money running, robotic politicians, robotic media people, robotic police, robotic judges and courts. I mean, the whole thing is something that George Orwell would never have predicted. It's just terrifying. I can't go on. I could go on and on, but I don't want to depress anyone.
Well, look, you're painting a picture of a dystopic picture there. I think we need a bit of light at the end of the tunnel. Have you got any? I mean, I know you say we should be talking to each other, but do you think there's any, you know, I mean, obviously you're doing a great job with the Crispin Flintoff show in spreading a bit of rationality, some really good critiquing of what's going on. But, you know, if someone is sitting there in their chair getting more and more depressed with what you've been saying, what have you got to say to them?
Well, I mean, I can only look at back at history and say that, you know, there's been worse situations than this and we've come out of them. And I think that, I mean, I believe that there is a kind of force of nature that does save us sometimes from those people who are destroying us. They get their comeuppance. They do, because they get greedy. They start making mistakes. Let's look at 2015. They thought they'd nailed politics, but they left a tiny little chink in the wall of the citadel. And we all piled in when Jeremy Corbyn got on that ballot paper. And they had no idea what we'd do when we did that. They only have to make one little mistake and we can all get piled in again, because there's so many of us and we just need a little glimmer of hope and we'll be away. And that's really what it's about. We've just got to find a tiny light and really go for it. And I'm hopeful that will happen, because this, all these people who try and control us, they get complacent. They lose their sense of how big and important they are. And we can exploit that. I think we can exploit that, but it's, at the moment it doesn't look very good, but I think maybe it will. I think that's about as cheerful as I can get, I'm afraid.
Okay, Crispin, where can listeners find your show? How often is it on and whereabouts are you? I suppose you are maybe a bit less this week, but you are still on social media from time to time.
I'm on my Crispin Flintoff show. If you look up the Crispin Flintoff show on Twitter, you'll see some kind of angry tweets. I'm trying to do stuff on TikTok. I've got 6 chickens in my garden, and I'm trying to do chicken broadcasts, but then I heard David Beckham's doing them, and that just appalled me. I didn't know he was, and I think, God, get your anyway. So I'm trying that on TikTok. I'm trying stuff on YouTube. There's a Crispin Flintoff show on YouTube. You can see lots of videos there that are being shadow banned by YouTube. I'm just chipping away until something happens, until the revolution, I suppose.
And finally, we've got JD Vance has done his tour of Europe, really saying, look, you need to get a bit of democracy, you guys. Are you in any way hopeful about the new administration in the States?
I was a bit hopeful when they had that sort of confrontation with Zelensky, who I didn't know now has 2 Y's at the end of his name. I think he should have 3, actually. I think we should add another Y on Zelensky. I kind of liked that little confrontation. It was open, and they kind of showed him that he can't tell people what's what, and we've been funding the war. But then they started to back Israel and turn a blind eye to more genocidal behaviour, and sort of talking up problems with Iran and the situation in Syria. The Ukraine situation isn't really resolved, and I don't quite know what's going on there, whether Trump has got a deal or whether the people negotiating for him are actually doing what he wants, or it's just bluff. So I don't know. I'm not sure about the whole thing. I mean, they're all crooks, really, aren't they? I mean, whether it's Trump or Biden. I mean, I thought Biden was bad. And he was. I mean, he was terrible. And I thought Trump was going to be terrible, but we'd know what he was doing. But I don't even now think that Trump's transparent in what he does. So,
well, I mean, I don't think even he knows what he's doing, does he?
I think he might know more than Biden did. But, no, I don't know. Yeah, exactly. I don't know what... It's very hard to judge these people. They just seem to be... It's all... There's so much performance going on all the time. All this stuff is performance. And there's no... you know, there's genuine human beings just talking. And everyone's used to a kind of fake dialogue between politicians and us, where they look sincere and pained when they're telling us they've got to do cuts, and when they look angry when Ukraine's had one drone attack on it, but don't look at all angry when Palestine has been attacked, when Gaza's been attacked, or the West Bank's been attacked. It's just nothing's worth watching in a way, because you don't really know what it's about. It's just going to kind of befuddle you. It's a very difficult situation. We're in a difficult time.
Yeah, so if AI was to take over now, would anyone notice?
I'd prefer AI government would be my favourite government. I mean, as long as it wasn't, the whole system wasn't set up by Musk or something. I think AI would...
Which it is.
Well, if there was a properly AI prime minister... I mean, Starmer's a bit AI, but I mean, a proper AI one, I'd be quite happy with that at the moment. I mean, they're just so fake, that the ones now, that be better off having an AI.
Yeah, I'm not so sure about that. I think I prefer taking someone completely at random off a train, making them prime minister for a year. I think they do a lot of a better job. Anyway, Crispin Flintoff.
Yeah.
Crispin Flintoff, thanks ever so much for joining us again.
Cheers.